Get excited, Whataburger fans. Our one-of-a-kind mushroom Swiss burger is back.
If you love mushrooms, you're going to love this burger.
Two patties, two slices of Swiss cheese, two layers of mushrooms. These mushrooms are beautiful.
It's a really good balance between hearty and savory. And that au jus sauce on top.
The creamy au jus sauce. It really sets it apart.
Just adds flavor that makes you go, wow. It is just absolutely amazing.
It's not just a mushroom Swiss burger. It's a Whataburger mushroom Swiss burger. Here for a limited time.
Before I deployed to Afghanistan, Whataburger was the last meal I had. And then when I got back, it was my first meal back in the States, and it was the Chop House Cheddar Burger. It was every bit as good as I remembered it to be. My favorite part's the sauce, and then two patties, cheese, sauteed onions, and then the bacon. Who doesn't love bacon? And as soon as you bite into it, you're like, yep, that's what home tastes like. Whataburger's Chop House Cheddar Burger is my all-time favorite.
Hi, everybody. This is Kathy Bilski, the Quantum Leap Let Light Unite show on UPRN Radio. And this is February 8th, 2019. I've got a really great show for you tonight. We are going to talk about unions with Lisa Marie Akau, if I pronounced that right. I'm still Hawaiian challenged. And she's with the American Federation of Government Employees and AFL-CIO organizer. And before I bring her on, I want to tell you something very, very exciting that was put in front of my face. Now, for all you guys that have been doing energy work and light work with me, and we've been giving a lot of attention to the oceans, and well, this is really exciting. The scientists here in Hawaii are really, really excited because they are saying the ocean reefs are coming back. And they're surprised and excited. And I had to share that with everybody because light work and energy work does work. So thank you, God Squad, for giving an attention. There's wonderful confirmation that what we're doing is working. So welcome, Lisa Marie. Did I pronounce your last name right?
That you did. Thank you.
Wow, I'm impressed.
Yeah, very good.
So you're with the American Federation of Government Employees, and that's the AFL-CIO. Can you tell everybody what that is?
The American Federation of Labor Congress Industrial Organization. So the American Federation of Government Employees, we fall under that huge umbrella of various unions here in Hawaii, and very grateful that we do. With the government shutdown that recently happened, we were able to utilize their community services program to help all federal workers here in Hawaii by providing them with support, encouragement, and also food boxes, which Kathy did come to last week, Friday, at the Kona Airport. And thank you so much for coming in and being there. You do have such wonderful energy. And it was shared with the volunteers from the food basket and with myself and the steward that was there. So I'm really grateful that we do fall into the AFL-CIO here in Hawaii. If not, I don't know what we would have done. But just very grateful.
Well, you know, it's very impressive because we have, what, 8 islands here in Hawaii. And, you know, your union, the AFL-CIO, has actually gone out to almost every single island and brought food to help the federal workers that weren't being compensated.
Yeah, that was very impressive. So the union that I work for is the American Federation of Government Employees, and with the AFL-CIO's community service program, which is called the Hawaii Employees Lifeline Program Help. Through that community services program, we were able to go to the Big Island, Hilo, Kona, Maui, Kauai, Molokai, Lanai, and here in Honolulu to to support our federal workers that, you know, did not receive a pay, that had to work during the longest government shutdown in history for 35 days, where their bills accumulated, rent, you know, the basic necessities of even putting gas in your car couldn't have been met. So buying food also put a strain on them. And just the sheer factor of knowing that you have to show up to work because federal employees cannot strike. And such as with TSA, the line of duty that the line of duty that they have to perform is to be vigilant in detecting objects of threat and to be focused at what they're doing. You know, must have been really difficult because in the back of their mind, there were people that were going to be evicted because they couldn't make their rent. You know, and then the other thing about childcare and like, just, you know, putting gas in your car. In the Big Island, we had an officer that lives in Hilo but works in Kona and was sleeping in his car because he could not afford to buy gas. So let alone being able to, you know, concentrate at work, I'm sure it's been difficult. When the government, partial government shutdown ended on January 25th, all federal workers, essential workers, still had to show up to work. I would say, I believe it's a week ago that they finally received their first pay. And when they did, it was for a pay period and a half. So they were a taxpayer. They had double dental and medical benefits withdrawn. And they didn't include overtime, holiday pay, night differential. So their taxes were higher than their net pay. So I'm hoping that today they receive their second check and are made whole, but I've not yet had that confirmed. So with February 15th coming next week, you know, these officers still have a lot on their mind. And with the uncertainty of the government shutting down again, it just really, it's mind-boggling to think that these officers still, you know, are there with the federal agencies. One, you know, if they were to leave, they leave everything behind, such as everything they've worked for numerous years. So I'm really grateful that we do have this program and that the Hawaii labor unions have been here supporting all of our federal workers, whether it be by, you know, with travel, thanking them. They've had donations of food. Federal workers, of course, cannot accept monetary, they can't accept cash. So because of their OPM regulations, but it's been, you know, they have such high resolve to continue to show up to work and not get paid and to still serve and protect all of us. And with our industry here in Hawaii, our number one industry is tourism. You know, we've got TSA at the airports, we've got the Coast Guard with the ocean, we've got Immigration Customs Enforcement officers, the marshals, the federal building in itself here as well, that are affected, you know, with having had to show up to work and not getting paid. So
that does not include the contractors that are not getting paid, does it?
No, it doesn't. So there are thousands of federal contractors that will not get their back pay either. So that I know is something that our Hawaii delegates are fighting for, but I, you know, it's uncertain if they're going to get that. But all of these federal contractors right now, you know, they haven't received anything, and that's to include.
What is a contractor? What do they do?
It varies. A basic one would be someone that cleans the buildings, the housekeepers in such as the federal building, maintenance workers,
people that cook,
that clean. Contract.
Yeah, outside people who have organizations that have a contract with the federal government to do that outsource laborers that don't fall under the union but yet are effective.
Okay, let's go back a bit. And you know, there's so many people out there. When you say union, what are you talking about? Can you describe what the union is to you? What is a union?
What is the union? Hi, Kathy, this is Kalai. My background with the union, I actually came from a family where two parents were involved with unions. And unions were basically formed, a group of people got together, they were formed to concentrate on wages as well as work conditions. So my mother worked for Kaiser for many years, and she was a member of Local 5. My father was a bus driver for what we know as OTS prior to that, Oahu Transit Services prior to that. I believe it was MTL. And that union, the bus that we know on Oahu, came to be when Harry Weinberg bought a bunch of shares and with a private company prior to statehood. And he bought a bunch of shares. He then had about 10% of the business and reorganized, restructured, and that was then sold to the city and county of Honolulu. And one of the people that learned from him, his name was Gerald W. Duwart. And Gerald W. Duwart was my father's teacher. Like I said, he was a bus driver. He then later went on to become a superintendent on the firm side. But to me, unions are basically a group of people who needed to fight for fair wages and fair work environments. And it started off very small in Hawaii, and there was a lot of struggle with that. But my background is that. And there was a lot of strikes, a lot of confrontation in the past to get to where we are now. And again, you know, I heard you mention light work. There's power in numbers when we're all aligned together for the purpose of helping each other. So I think more can get done when we have a clear objective. So that's one of the meanings, what unions mean to me.
Well, I'm 66. Well, I will be 66 in July. You know, when you get to a point, you're already there. And I grew up in Michigan and in the Dearborn, Detroit area. My dad worked, he was a tool and die maker at Cadillacs for 32 years. And I'm sorry, Dad, I was going to get his union local number and I forgot. My bad. So I grew up with unions, and I was considered, you know, now when you look back, they call it the golden years of the union. And my dad, I'm very proud to say, you know, you talk about going on strike and fighting for what you need to create for the common good. And my dad was out on the strike line and he was hit in the head, got a brain aneurysm, ended up in the hospital. But my God, I can remember growing up, you know, now I would consider us middle class, upper middle class. You know, my dad was tool and die, so he was skilled. And, you know, those guys got, if you worked over 40 hours, you got time and a half. If you worked a holiday, you got double time and sometimes triple time. And they worked and they had benefits. You know, we had health care and all that paid for. You know, it was awesome. Yeah, and but then again, my dad worked a lot, and those guys, they worked a lot. And I also remember the times that they were on strike and sitting at the kitchen table talking about it, playing cards. you know, worrying, you know, were they going to get a good contract? And, you know, I was only a little kid then. So I think, you know, we have a lot of the same experiences that any people, group of people getting together, wanting to better themselves is always going to have a difficult time because they're going up against the establishment. Am I right or wrong?
Oh, you're right.
You're right.
So to me, you know, I love unions. Of course, I couldn't talk bad about unions when I was growing up, but I see the benefits. Oh, God, no. You know, if you grow up in a union family, you do not say a bad word about unions. But, you know, when you're with the group of people that had to fight for their rights, and wasn't it the union that gave us 40-hour work week and, you know, overtime? Mm-hmm. However, what do you think, like, throughout the years has happened to where business got their act together and they decided, what, if they don't pay you over 40 hours and you don't get overtime and you don't get benefits?
Yeah.
So what is the question? I'm sorry, what was the question?
Well, yeah, how have you seen unions change throughout the years? And what are your union benefits today?
My background, like I said, my parents both were in unions. One is Local 5 here, which has Kaiser as well as the hotels on Oahu, the workers in the hotels. My mother came from that union, and my father started off as a bus driver for the bus, Oahu Transit Services. I later started my shipping career on board the cruise ship and became a member of Seafarers International Union. And through Seafarers International Union, there are several pensions. We make a living wage. We have covered medical. And there's so many benefits, you know, for being in the union. I had the opportunity to be educated and skilled in this particular trade and industry.
Was that like an apprentice program?
Right. So we do have an apprentice program under Seafarers International Union, and it's a 1-year program. And basically, Seafarers International Union represents the unlicensed members that work on board various vessels. So they're merchant mariners. And so I had the opportunity to start working on a cruise ship. And I started on a cruise ship, and I found out that I was a union member. I became what everyone knows as a shop steward. And I started representing members, other co-workers on board the vessel. And that is how my education, direct education, started with unions. And that's where I learned what type of rights I possess as a member and what type of benefits I obtain being a member. So for me, that's when my education started. I was able to have free education. I was able to make a living wage. I was able to travel around the world. And I was able to take continuing education courses in order for me to upgrade or move up in my specific department. And all of that was paid for, including my travel. I have a couple of pensions along with that, and I have full medical. So there was a lot of benefits that came along with that. I didn't know that at the time. I was only in my early 20s. I had no idea how that would change my life. And I'm 40 now, and I'm still amazed at the benefits of it. And currently, I'm no longer a merchant mariner, but I am still affiliated with the union and a big supporter. And now that I'm a bit older, I encourage others to take advantage of the apprentice program that's available. Hawaii being so expensive, I'm definitely an advocate for opportunity and to help those that this might be a career change for them and an opportunity to help each person. Again, going back to the spiritual aspect, we try to help one person at a time because we know that can make a big impact on the community. And that's, you know, essentially in a global perspective, the ripple effect of what we'd like to have an impact on one person at a time.
So as far as with the federal government employees union in regards to the business and how that's changed for unions, one, being that the government has bettered themselves, so some may think so, they actually, for me personally speaking, continue to undermine the working class, the middle class. Our federal employees recently were held hostage and had to work. Federal employees get their retirement and pension funds from them. So we as a union don't offer them that because as federal workers, they have that through the government. It's very scary, I believe, to be a federal worker because of everything that's going on in the world right now and with people that don't really see all that our federal workers do. For some reason, I think that they believe that federal workers, and I've heard this before, that federal workers are overpaid and they don't do anything when that is not the truth. They are just working people that take pride in their jobs and continue to work, but they are not overpaid. In fact, they are overworked and underpaid. So that's a crazy thing there. As far as with benefits of the union, being that they're federal employees and being that I work for the largest federal employees union, American Federation of Government Employees, every day the union lobbies on our federal workers' behalf because their jobs are political. Pay is non-negotiable and the ability to strike, they can't strike. So the business of the government has actually been clamping down on our federal workers. And it doesn't look like it's going to get any better. If anything, there's always something that's being proposed, whether it's an executive order to do away with representational rights of the union, or even the use of official time or the use of government facilities. That has been brought up in executive orders, and I'm grateful that that was shot down, but that's just the beginning to the attacks of unions. So for me personally, I'm born and raised in Hawaii. My father worked for Pearl Harbor for 25 years. I've never known anything about being part of a union family other than my father worked hard. My mother and my father both worked hard to put us through good education and such. And you know, my father and mother weren't home either a lot because they were working so that they could provide for the family. When I was an employee with TSA, the union at that time, the union local president, God bless his soul, Al Vaughn, he would come around and start talking to me about union. And I was like, don't talk to me about the union. I don't want to get fired. I just got a federal job. So stay away. And he was persistent, and he was telling me it's by coming together and increasing our voice, like with our membership, you know, we can stand together and fight for what's right. And God bless him. I'm grateful that I was able to step into this door of opening my eyes and realizing, wow, that's about helping each other and doing what is right, you know. And fighting for each other and just coming together. So I'm rather new in this, but being here in Hawaii with the State Fed, AFL-CIO, and these wonderful people that truly embody what it means to be part of the union, coming together and helping each other and standing there and picking each other up. I've been blessed with that sense of unity. So I'm really grateful to be a part of that and to continue to learn. But yeah, federal employees as a whole, looking at where we're at right now in the state of our current administration, it's just the beginning of a battle, I believe, to do away with unions. And that's not what is needed. You know, that definitely is not what is needed. I think that we're going back in time, and it's scary that it is.
Yeah, the TSA is not allowed to strike. And the last time, there was a strike with the air traffic controllers, I think it was 1988, out of 13,000.
Yeah,
11 out of 13,000 people, Reagan fired over 11,000 because they went on strike.
Right. So it's not just TSA that's not allowed to strike. Actually, any of the essential federal workers can't strike at all. So even though TSA has 45,000 officers nationwide, you know, a lot of people during this government shutdown were questioning, I just walk off the job. Well, like I said earlier, if they did that, they'd lose everything that they worked 15 years for. And they could not even get unemployment benefits. So that's another factor as to why they continue to show up to work. You know, they don't want to lose what they worked so hard for. People have been saying that they should have had a sick day. And yes, maybe the union could have fought if, you know, like, yes, you, by law, you have sick days and you could have used it. But again, with the current administration, that may have been grounds to just go ahead and fire them all and replace them. Because even during the government shutdown, there were hundreds of people, as reported on the news in the mainland, that were applying to work at TSA, even though they weren't getting paid yet. So it's just, you know, it's another scary thing to know that, you know, they have to show up. They have to continue showing up and not getting paid and to wait on our government to go ahead and issue them back pay.
Yes, well, they can't go on strike, but their families can go out and demonstrate, correct?
Yes, correct.
So, you know, I think that what happened last time is everybody was in tremendous shock. And, you know, I hope the next time it happens that the family members will get out there and express their views. Now, is it legal to protest at an airport?
Is it legal? Well, here in Hawaii, working with the Hawaii airports, in the past, I had to apply to get a permit to do any type of display. I have since found out through other unions that you can do something at the airport as long as it's not disruptive. And such is that the silent rally that we had at the airport, where we have almost 150 labor unions and leaders come out and to show our support for our federal workers. So I believe that it's legal that we could actually do a demonstration at the airport, but each airport, more so in Hawaii, is different. And such as with TSA's management, you know, they're always looking at some way to say this is illegal, you can't do that. So, but if need be, Kathy, we will do it.
Nothing ventured, nothing gained, right?
Correct.
If they think they can, and you know, I have to again honor the air traffic controllers and the stewardesses union. You know, really, if it wasn't for them standing and going, we're done, we're not going to do this. And to me, you know, that affected the Congress and the Senate. And until then, nothing affected them because they got paid.
Yeah. That's true. So if another government shutdown should happen on the 15th, I'm hoping that, let's hope it doesn't, but in the event that it does, I'm hoping that we have more FAA and the stewardesses, and also, like you were saying, the family members, because this is ridiculous. You are definitely affecting entire communities by continuing to have people work without getting paid, and it's breaking down families and communities. So,
and the middle class.
Yeah, and the middle class.
The middle class is the key. If the middle class goes, you know, they will have an economic collapse, and they will have to reorganize and restructure how things are done. So that's economically, that's what we're concerned about. On a smaller scale, we're just concerned about the people. You know, every single person who's affected and their families.
It does. It does trickle down everywhere. And being on an island, you can really, really feel it. You know, I own a store in Honaka'a. And when I look out on the streets and there's nobody there, you know, maybe a few Europeans and a couple Canadians. Yeah, it's scary. You know, something's wrong. I was very impressed when, you know, I heard you guys, you know, you're helping the employees even still. Didn't you say that some of them just got their checks and, you know, they still can't afford to buy food?
Yeah. Last week, Saturday, I was in Molokai, because it is a we thing, it's never an I, but we were distributing boxes of food. We had 30 boxes and all 30 boxes went. And it, for me, this whole process, even here in Honolulu, has been very humbling. It's sad to see grown people crying, especially if they have both mother and father that are federal employees, because it's double whammy. Both of them aren't getting a check and they have their kids in the car. But being out in Molokai, you know, and here in Hawaii, the highest cost of living, but in Molokai, their gas is $5.06 a gallon. And they have huge families there, you know, to see an older Hawaiian man just break down and crying in gratitude for this box of food, you know. So I'm truly grateful for our community services program, the HELP program, and the AFL-CIO, and all of the Hawaii labor unions that are helping. We're going to continue to do this. I believe that Kauai has one more food drop. Maui has two more. Kona and Hilo, they can go on Saturdays to the food basket. And the food basket, God bless her, Kristen, God bless all of the food banks, actually. They've been phenomenal. But in Hilo and Kona, they can just go to the food basket there and they will get support there as well. Honolulu, we have our last Feeding Our Feds is what we call it, next Tuesday here. It will be at the IBEW. International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Union on 1935 Howe Street from 12 to 4. And, you know, it's just been great to see what unions really are. A group of people coming together to help those other people that desperately need it. So I'm so proud to be part of the union movement, because it is always about helping people, you know, and especially with our federal workers that don't have that ability to stand out there and strike. And usually the federal workers are the ones that have donated in the past to the food banks. And it is a little weird for them to,
very humbling,
for them to have to now come to a food distribution center. You know, a lot of officers in the beginning at the Seafarer Call, one officer would drive through and she got on the phone and she's telling her coworkers, hey, just come. It's really simple. It's easy. You know, it's not, you know, so there's some
pride
in that of, you know, coming. So we try to make it as comfortable and just let them know that we truly, truly care about them.
Can I mention when I was there, you were talking about how the government didn't really want the TSA workers to come get free food in their uniforms.
Yes, that was ridiculous. It still is. I had an issue on Maui about that as well, and it's just crazy. So, you know, TSA is the business and the management there, and it's not a violation for them to come and pick up food that's being distributed to help them. When they found out that it was a union event, they were telling the workers there that they couldn't come in their uniform, that they had to wear a jacket. And it's just crazy because that's false. And where 2 days prior to the so-called union, it's crazy, the so-called union doing an event to distribute food, they had an organization come 2 days before, and they allowed every officer to go out there and pick up the surplus that was provided to them from that agency in their uniform. So when TSA's manager happened to come on over, you know, I had a talk with him to inform him that this is not a violation and that they need to inform all officers that they can come here in their uniform. And of course, I got the response from, oh, no, it's not a violation. It's only a violation if they're speaking to the media, you know, doing a live interview. And I said, exactly. So will you go back and let them know? And he's like, oh, yeah. But the whole thing about it was I think they want to do away with humans. And that's just another way of divisive tactic getting the. And for me, the whole thing is like agencies lead with fear. And that's not a good thing. You know, it's bad enough that they weren't getting paid, and now you're giving them these directives and having these fear tactics moving over officers' heads. It's not helping anyone. It's just giving them, the agency, a little bit more power until it's challenged by the union officials. I'm not a union official. I'm an organizer. So my job is to continue to try and help officers. But it ended up when the Kona Food strike finally kicked off, officers came in their uniform, and I was so grateful for that. Being on Maui, I had another situation, and it was just, again, you know, the perception of even if it were a union event, you can still come in your uniform. So it's just been, you know, it's always a fight. And if there's anything that I've learned, you've got to fight for the good fight and continue to do so no matter what.
Well, I'm going to just want to throw in there, if people have gotten their taxes done, they're going to see something really probably horrible, everything I've heard. And I have not gotten my taxes done, but I'm telling you, they're going to say, work out my taxes that I owe money, I am not paying it. And if enough of us get together and say, we are not paying it, and you go back to last year's tax law, then we'll pay that when it's, you know, readjusted. I think things will shift too, because it's like the robber barons have taken over.
Mm-hmm.
So, right. Yeah, I'm a big rebel. Can you tell?
I love you, Kathy Bilski. You are awesome. Robin Hood. That's Robin Bilski.
Robin Hood. You're talking about Robin.
Yes, I know, but I'm calling her Robin Bilski. I do love her.
Well, I have to say, you know, I'm ready to go out and picket and, you know, go on strike for the federal workers that can't, because if we don't go out there and express our views out on the street, and by that I mean in a nonviolent way, but you're putting your body out there, and you can carry a sign, you know, mm-hmm, you can express yourself other than the internet. And, you know, when the president was out there and saying, oh my God, all the federal workers were behind us, if you get the families out there with signs saying, no, we're not, and end this now, I think it would end a lot quicker, don't you?
Yeah. You know, Kathy, when I was growing up, my mother worked for Kaiser, and my mother and father, around the same time, they both had strikes going on. Yeah. And I remember Kaiser very well because I was still young. I was in grade school, and it was in the 80s. And I remember being on the picket line with my mother and holding the signs. And of course, that you're not supposed to do that, but, you know, they couldn't afford a babysitter. My father, my mother had to switch off and get extra jobs. But I was right there with them in the picket lines, holding the sign that I could, that just barely reached from my shoulders to to my ankle. I barely got off the ground, and I walked in that picket line around in circles for hours. And the amount of attention I remember back then, I didn't understand it. But I heard later that when they showed it, it was because that's who you're affecting, is the families and the children. And so I believe now in our day and age, with social media and Facebook and such, that it makes a bigger impact to see. You know, they might not, people might not act when they see adults picketing, or when they realize that children are involved and they're the ones fighting for their parents while their parents are working. I believe it does make a bigger impact, and it humanizes the situation.
Oh boy. So does that mean, Kawhi, that when I go picket, I got to go rent me a couple kids?
Yeah.
or we could go to the local schools and say, you know, we're going to have a little, you know, group outing. And it's going to be a civic lesson.
That's true. I think that's one of the things that has to be done. I mean, I wish I had learned growing up about unions. I mean, it takes what it takes. It is what it is. But I think that a lot of people don't understand why unions are formed and why it's necessary. And I think it should be taught in school as well, because white, like, dominantly unionized. And we need to teach our children, our younger folks. I talk to officers in different agencies, like, you know, about, hey, do you know about unions? And nope. Okay, well, I'm here to talk to you about the union now. I don't need it now. And they walk away, and I'm like, wait, you're not getting it.
I think that, what's that called? I believe that a lot of the younger generation, especially like anyone who is probably under 40, you know, they probably haven't gone through any kind of economic issue
yet.
So they haven't really had the chance to experience hardship. And so they don't really understand, you know, they're in a day and age where everything is instant on their phone. And they don't really interact and get to know people face to face anymore. I think the way things are going now, it's a bad situation, but it forces people to humble themselves and really interact and talk to each other and be honest about what is going on. And it's very interesting, because people are ashamed to come and get a box of food because they're afraid of what strangers might think, as opposed to before, their priorities were, I need to take care of my family. So I think there's a shift in how people view themselves and how they act upon it, and what their priorities are. I think it's very humbling. And I think they need to be just honest with themselves. And I don't think a lot of times when people are taking selfies and posting things on Facebook, they're not very honest. And there's nothing wrong with being honest. They are in a situation not because they put themselves there. They're forced in it. And it's out of their control. But they shouldn't pretend. And I think that's a big issue, is image. People like to pretend now because they can hide behind the computer. They can hide behind their phones. And now they need to be honest with themselves of what they need. And so those are the things I think within themselves people are having to come to terms with.
Have you ever heard of the historian Howard Zinn?
Howard Zinn?
No. He wrote the history of the USA, the people's version, the people's history. And, you know, when I read that, it's the real book of our history. It's about all the strikes and all the times the common man came together. And when they did, they had powerful movement. But that's not taught in our regular school books. You know, you don't hear them talk about union and the union years and what the unions have done to benefit us. You know, I agree with you. And the younger kids have no idea. Well, why would they if we don't talk about it? And how good it can be.
And you know, it's something that they do need to be taught. And I think people need to stop thinking about what other people think about them. These people are strangers on Facebook, supposedly their friends. And they need to have more intimate and real friends that actually care, not someone who clicks on their likes and clicks on hearts. Because sets them up for, it puts them on a pedestal and kind of messes them up with what is important, you know?
Think that these kids just lack purpose and they don't have a mission?
Yes, but you know, like I said, I started on the cruise ship in my 20s. You know, when you're young, you don't know. Nobody knows what they want to do or what their purpose is. And I do have faith that over time, you know, they'll figure it out. You know, it'll come to them because it happened for all of us. And we end up, you know, 20, 30, 40 years later, looking back and saying, wow, I got here because I worked on a cruise ship as a waitress because I wanted to travel, make money, and party. Yet I'm in a position where I'm helping to change other people's lives 20 years later. And so we don't know where our journey is going to take us, but we know through the journey we'll somehow arrive there, and that's what we can hope for.
But we also need to get
To educate them.
Right. We need to educate our younger ones. Even my son that's 13 doesn't realize like what unions are and what we do. So you know, I've been placed in this position to be able to share with him. You know, like this is why I'm doing this, about helping people. And it, to take that even further, to actually try and teach him about the history of Hawaii's union, you know, and why we are here. They don't get the 40-hour work week, the sick leave, the FMLA, and none of that. They don't get any of that, you know. They don't understand it. And like Kalei was talking about being in the picket line when she was small, I didn't have those experiences. You know, I just had working hard parents that worked hard, and whereas working with all these unions, I hear numerous stories about how when they were younger, this is how it was being in a union family. You know, everything happens the way it's supposed to, but now I have the opportunity to try and reach out to my little one and to show him so that he hopefully will be able to take that, and when he's getting older, look back and be like, wow, this is part of who I am, and this is part of me that I need to help other people as well, because that's what it's about, is coming together to help people. But I do believe that labor history has to be taught in classes, you know, and it's hard for the younger people right now. When you watch the news or those that are anti-union talk about unions and such, you know, or, you know, that they're all criminals. It's all about what's been shown on TV. It's not helping anything. So it also has some of the younger folks being like, oh yeah, I heard about unions. No, they're all corrupt. And that is not helping any of us. The history of unions need to be taught.
Have you ever thought about maybe putting together a program where, you know, like they do with the military, they go to school, you know, trying to actually screw those kids. But to have somebody go there and put together a little program, the history of unions, and maybe, you know, go to the auditorium and do a group history, you know, on the unions.
That would be a great thing.
That's an idea.
I do know through the Labor Community Services, when we do under the HELP program, going out to the different schools and giving back to the communities, whether it be painting or, you know, just re-beautifying the school, that we do have our labor unions come out there and talk to the students. But something has to be a little bit more consistent. Something has to be done at all schools and such. So that is a great idea that you do That's a great idea.
I will say that as a child, when I was picketing with mother, I didn't know what it was. I knew mother wasn't getting paid. I knew they were angry when people would cross the line to go to work, you know. But what I do remember is this, and this is why I helped Lisa when she asked for help. I remember that strangers came up and gave their entire paycheck to the workers. I remember people dropping off food, complete strangers, for the people that were in the picket line. And I remember those things, just strangers coming because they truly felt bad and they wanted to help. And these are just individual people that came in. They were not part of any organization. They were not part of any company, or they didn't have any motive. They just came and said, here's my paycheck. I just cashed it. You need it more than we do.
The human factor.
And that was actually the lesson that stuck out. So when Lisa came and asked for help, I said, of course, you know, that is what I reflected back to. And then I realized, as I learned about unions, that, oh, these people were in a union. And so people would make food, they would bring food over. That's the story that stuck in my head as a child. Because if you were to tell me what a union was then, I had no idea. I just said those people were coworkers of my mother and they weren't getting paid because the company wasn't paying them. And I didn't know why. But, you know, it's those kind of stories that I do remember that just stuck with me. And it shaped me to always be vigilant and always help when someone needed help. If it was righteous, it was the right thing to do, Pono, I didn't have an issue helping. And I made sure that I didn't focus too much on the political aspect of it. I made sure to remember it was always about the people. And that's the one thing I am very thankful for growing up, that my parents always made it an issue that you don't help the cause, you help the people. They were very strong in making that clear. Because if we didn't focus on the right objective, which is the people, we would lose our way.
That's beautiful. Ladies, if somebody wanted to contact you to get more information on about unions, how would they do it?
Oh, they could email me at lmariecow@yahoo.com. Polite.
They can contact me at miskalae@hotmail.com.
Wonderful. Thank you, guys. It's been a really enjoyable hour, and it's gone by so quick.
Thank you so much, Kathy.
Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. And Lisa, are you guys ready to protest after I get back from Louisiana after the 19th? I'll be more than happy to go to the airports. I probably could pick up a few more people to come with.
Let's hope we don't get there. But the other thing, the one thing that I would like to say, it's not about, you know, I got a lot of people talking about, I had an issue with someone recently somewhere. And they're telling me it's a Democrat, it's the Democrats. And I looked at the guy and I said, I'm a Democrat. And no, it is about us caring about each other. And we support those who support our working families. And these attacks to our working families, they're going to continue. But we must stand together for everyone, you know, and to come together and to be there and help each other. Because that's all we've got is the human race. That's really what it is for me. It's about the human race. I don't care what political race you're in. If you support working families, then we support you.
Oh, that's beautiful. And on that note, we're going to have to say good night. Everybody, I hope you have a lovely weekend. And next week, I will be out. My daughter's getting married. So, Joe, the
producer. Congratulations.
I know. I'm excited. And I had Mary come in today from Kona, you know, visit the store. And I just kind of said, well, am I going to expect a really nice pat down? Should I wear my Spanx?
God bless me. I love Mary too. You know, we've throughout this whole experience, we've met numerous angels, numerous people that truly care and continue to fight the good fight. And she's.
Welcome to your hometown Whataburger. Here you can add as much flavor as you like.
Those add-ons just add a little extra touch.
It sets Whataburger apart. It takes it up kind of to the next level.
Grilled peppers and onions, bacon's perfect. Gotta have them grilled jalapenos. It completely changes the taste of the burger.
This burger is made for me, and they're gonna make it just right every time I come.
Avocado goes well with everything. What doesn't it go with?
They say you can't buy happiness, but the add-ons get real close.
We're adding big flavor here at your hometown Whataburger.
Before I deployed to Afghanistan, Whataburger was the last meal I had. And then when I got back, it was my first meal back in the States, and it was the Chop House Cheddar Burger. It was every bit as good as I remembered it to be. My favorite part's the sauce, and then two patties, cheese, sauteed onions, and then the bacon. Who doesn't love bacon? And as soon as you bite into it, you're like, yep, that's what home tastes like. Whataburger's Chop House Cheddar Burger is my all-time favorite.